Welcome to Swift Coaches Academy, a podcast dedicated to bringing health and wellness professionals the uncensored truth behind what it really takes to succeed in the health industry with me, your host, Xenia Wood. As an accredited exercise physiologist and business owner for almost a decade, I'm on a mission to transform the lives of ambitious health professionals like you who want more and are ready to take action to create incredible impact in your careers and unlock financial freedom in your business. So join me as I speak candidly with industry leaders about the struggles and successes from within the trenches through thought-provoking conversations.
What is scapular winging? Who has it? Is it relevant? What is the difference between winging and scapular dyskinesis? Do we overdiagnose scapular winging? What muscles are weak? What are tight? What's strong? Let's start, as always, with the definition of scapular winging. Interestingly, in the research, it's actually noted as internal rotation. So, scapular winging, or internal rotation of the scapula, is the degree of lift of the medial border of the scapula from the rib cage. This was stated by Hung in 2015. When people talk about winging, they often confuse it with the term scapular dyskinesis, so we'll define that too. Dyskinesis is easy. Dys means difficult or abnormal, and kinesia means movement. So therefore, scapular dyskinesis is a deviation from the normal resting or active position of the scapula during shoulder movements. So to fully understand what that means, we first have to understand what normal movement is. The movement often referred to is called scapulohumeral rhythm. Research dictates that during the first 30 degrees of shoulder flexion or abduction, minimal scapular movement occurs. Beyond this point, there is a 2-to-1 ratio of humeral to scapular movement, meaning that for every 2 degrees that the humerus or the upper arm bone moves into flexion or abduction, the scapula moves into 1 degree of upward rotation. So to assess if someone has scapular dyskinesis, we compare these two movements of how scapular upward rotation and humeral elevation relate in reference to each other. However, Hung in 2015 makes an excellent point in that scapulohumeral rhythm is not all-encompassing. It fails to take into account the 3D nature of the body and ignores the level of tilting, which is where the scapula comes tipping up or tipping back, or winging, internal-external rotation. So to clarify, scapular dyskinesis is the umbrella term which dictates anything outside normal movement, and it's important to understand that scapular winging is just one method of dyskinesis or abnormal movement. So, scapular winging can occur in a variety of degrees with the general population. However, there are generally two distinct causes of winging. The first cause is due to muscular weakness. This is the most common and it's also less severe. This is what most people talk about when they say they have a winged scapula. The serratus anterior is the primary muscle responsible for winging. It does 3 things. Upwardly rotates the scapula, like that, protracts the shoulder girdle, so pushes it forward, and stabilizes the scapula as one of the muscles that attaches to it. The final role occurs through its pull into external rotation or flattening of that scapula onto the rib cage, and it explains how the serratus anterior is responsible for preventing the scapula from winging. The second method of winging is due to nerve injury, specifically of the long thoracic nerve and the brachial plexus from C5 to C7. When we look at the anatomy of the long thoracic nerve, it runs under our clavicle and up over our first rib, and it sits right beside our middle and posterior scalene, back here in the neck. This means that tension of these muscles can be a source of injury, and it leads to a loss of function that the muscle innervates, which is the serratus anterior. So long thoracic nerve palsy is the term for injury to this nerve and can occur through either traction or compression. Traction, meaning repetitive strenuous arm movements or extended periods of overstretching the nerve, and this will feel like stinging or burning. Then there's compression, which is direct trauma to the area, such as being hit in the ribs or excessive weight over the shoulders, such as hiking with a really heavy backpack for extended periods of time. Regardless of which method that the nerve gets injured, it will cause pain, loss of shoulder function, and scapular winging. As mentioned previously, the reason for winging is important because this dictates treatment. There's no point trying to build strength in a muscle when the nerve responsible for sending signals to it is injured. This is a classic cause of needing to address the cause, not the symptom. So now that we understand winging can occur through serratus anterior weakness or long thoracic nerve palsy leading to serratus inhibition, let's answer some questions on every coach's lips. First question, how important is scapular winging? When winging occurs statically, I'm not really bothered by it. In fact, my scapulars wing on a postural assessment. But to me, this gives no relevant information as to how the scapula moves. And that is what I believe we should be caring about. When winging limits full scapular or shoulder range of motion, especially when we move into protraction or upward rotation, that's what needs to be addressed. When this is due to frozen shoulder or just a lack of mobility, maintaining full range of motion is important to maintain full function. Neither scapular winging nor dyskinesia is relevant aesthetically. If your scapulars look funky when they move, but they move well and without restriction, don't worry about it. Second question, should we look to rid winging in people without pain or dysfunction? Hung, again, in 2015, found that scapular dyskinesis increases internal rotation, which we understand now means winging, as well as the anterior tilt, or that tipping forward of the scapula, during arm lowering movements, in comparison to people without dysfunction of the shoulder blade. So, if your scapulars move poorly in scapulohumeral rhythm, they also tend to be more likely to wing and have an anterior tilt. But is this relevant? A systematic review by Hickey in 2018 looked at the risk of future shoulder pain in currently asymptomatic athletes. Of the athletes who had scapular dyskinesis, 35% of those went on to experience shoulder pain at some point in the next 2 years, whereas 25% of athletes who didn't have dyskinesia also experienced shoulder pain on their follow-up. Recent evidence then suggests that 54% of all overhead athletes will test positive for poor scapular movement and they're asymptomatic. Of this 54% of asymptomatic poor shoulder moving athletes, 35% of those have a chance of experiencing shoulder pain. Now, two experts in the field of shoulder pain, Chris Littlewood and Ann Cools, went on to clarify in this review in their own editorial, explaining that an increased risk is not a guarantee. Not a guarantee that shoulder pain will develop, nor is it a guarantee that the absence of future shoulder pain is there. They also stated that changes in scapular kinematics, which we know to be movement, doesn't adequately explain the improvements in pain or function, and therefore we should be questioning whether scapular dyskinesis is even a modifiable or relevant risk factor to be considered. While this doesn't explicitly address winging as the scapular dyskinesis, it's the best we've got from the literature so far. It is important, though, to understand that scapular movement is never occurring in isolation. The scapula is a bone that attaches to two other bones, the humerus and the clavicle, via bony attachments, as well as the thoracic rib cage through muscular attachments. So for this reason, I find it interesting that we focus on scapular movement, but we don't actually look to assess muscular function of the muscles that actually pull an impact on the movement of the scapula. Maybe a shift in focus towards muscle recruitment would be a more relevant marker. A large bulk of the research does seem to claim that scapular kinematics relate to shoulder pain. Unfortunately, as Curvishaw in 2017 points out, the direct relationship is still unclear. So we're left wondering whether it's poor scapular movement that causes pain or pain that causes changes in scapular kinematics. Final question, what is the best method of assessing scapular winging in a clinic or a gym? So what can you do? Using a goniometer to assess winging of the scapula and the humerus simultaneously isn't really practical, nor does it tell us the full picture. As we discussed, the scapula moves in 3D, just like us, and scapulohumeral rhythm isn't going to account for the degree of the scapula winging or that tipping forward. So to assess this, You could hook someone up to a lab with expensive machines, but it doesn't seem to clearly determine a root cause of pain anyway. Currently, our best alternative is the naked eye. My rule of thumb is if you have to look really hard for scapular dyskinesia or winging, it isn't there. It should be obvious, and if so, it may be worth addressing when linked to a client's experience of shoulder pain. Maybe. In summary, I have three key take-homes for you guys. Firstly, categorize your scapular winging into either serratus anterior weakness or long thoracic nerve injury. This is critical to address the appropriate cause and determine what treatment method you'll be using. Secondly, winging may inhibit full overhead range of motion. In these scenarios, addressing it is probably necessary. Thirdly, when winging occurs without restriction or dysfunction, let it be. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Instead, look to promote quality movement through range and look to build strength. So, what should the research look into next? Maybe how much winging is too much? Should we all be able to wing? And is static winging relevant at all? Exercise rehab and movement is a confusing topic at the best of times. If you've been able to take something away from today, from this video, please subscribe, like, comment, and share it with your friends. If you have any questions or comments, I would love to hear your thoughts. Please shoot them below. I'm more than happy to answer.
Did you find something valuable in this episode? If so, I'd like to ask a tiny favor. If you have 30 seconds now, I'd love you to follow or share the podcast. That way, we can continue to bring you more real, raw, and uncensored stories from industry leaders. We also love hearing from you and what you loved about every episode. The best way to reach out is to DM me personally on Instagram @SwiftCoachesAcademy. Until next time, and in whatever you do, move swiftly.